Hello, everyone. I'm Lana. Joining me are the founders and friends of Cascadia, the foremost alt-right group in the Pacific Northwest. Basically, it's a quickly growing group of white Americans who have had it with anti-white politics and social norms. Their goals include to promote a white consciousness in the Pacific Northwest and prevent as well as reverse the discriminatory policies enacted in opposition to whites in their own homelands. Encourage tradition by investing in traditional family values and stopping the degradation of white culture. Preventing foreign influence on white people. Stopping the continuation of non-white immigration into their communities and rebuilding their socio-cultural infrastructure. We'll hear all about Cascadia next. Welcome to the show. We have Cato. I'll say hello to you first.
Hey there.
And then also we have Jeffrey Fairwater. Hello, welcome.
Hi, how's it going?
And of course we have Heron Volk.
Howdy, thanks for having me on.
Okay, so I'm going to just open this up to all three of you guys, but who started Cascadia?
That would be me, Heron Volk, and one of our other coordinators for Seattle named Strong Anon. And we started that about a year or so ago up in Seattle, and it's just grown out of that.
Wow, cool. So what is your mission, if you can summarize it?
Well, we have a mission statement we can pull from the website really quick that summarizes it pretty well.
I have it up, actually.
Perfect, yes.
The Cascadia mission statement is to promote a white ethnic consciousness in the Pacific Northwest and prevent, as well as reverse, the increasingly discriminatory policies enacted in opposition to whites in our own homelands. Encourage traditionalism by investing in traditional family values and stopping the degradation of white culture. Regain our sovereignty and prevent foreign influence on our people and stop the continuation of non-white immigration into our communities and rebuild our socio-cultural infrastructure.
Sounds like a good mission. Now, how many locations do you guys have going?
Well, we're operating in, I believe, about four states now. Our biggest presence is mostly in Oregon and Washington. We branched into Idaho and Northern California as well, and are working on chapters in Alaska.
Oh, that's great.
Don't forget the Canadian guys, too.
Yeah, British Columbia.
Yeah. Well, that's an entirely different country. So, yeah, we're really expanding territory there.
Well, that's great. So are some of these people that you've connected with that you already knew in the past, or are they just new people that you're meeting as you go?
A lot are new people entirely. There's quite a few that we know just through social media in general, and we realize, oh, you also live here, and that goes from there. But a lot of people are just, they don't know a single soul in this movement, and they're reaching out to us for the first time to try to meet people in meet space, and they don't have that connection to begin with.
Yeah, we heard that came from when we were just a forum group on TRS, but since we've separated from them and became our own fully functional group, it's pretty much been new people left and right.
Yeah, I always hear from people too that are just, they wake up to these things and they're really starving for friends. They feel so alone, even in these big cities. And we're always having people writing us, where's a meetup group or where are people in my area? So I think it's great that you guys are doing that. I'd love to have, you know, a Northwest group and a Southeast group and a Southern group. I think we're kind of almost building networks that are kind of nations within a nation, which is kind of covert. I like that idea.
Yeah, it's kind of a spider web, and it is happening. You know, you got to know where to look, but it is happening all over. And we are actually helping a lot of these other groups across the nation follow our template, essentially, to be successful in their organization and recruiting efforts.
Now, tell us about your vetting process and what are some of the concerns you have?
Initially, members usually reach out to us via email or some sort of social media like Twitter or Facebook, something like that. And they're given an interview of sorts over the email. We just ask them some general questions to make sure they're not, black or Antifa or anything like that. And once whichever coordinator that happens to be talking to them is convinced that the potential member is legitimate, then we set up an IRL meeting. And the meetings usually last anywhere from 2 to 6 hours, as that makes it nearly impossible for any sort of infiltrator to just BS their way through an interview for that long.
6 hours, yeah, exactly. That's smart.
And we usually plan out a lot of activities, like just recently over the weekend, myself, some of the other coordinators, we took a few new guys out and we went on some walks through some parks and played some Frisbee for, I think like 3 or 4 hours at least. And it was a ton of fun. All of them had a really good time.
That's great. So you guys get together to do things like hiking and probably have potlucks and all kinds of things, just building friends, right?
Yeah, building friends and just getting a feel for new guys in a social situation, seeing how they interact when they're basically in a room or a field full of nothing but fashy guys.
Yeah, that's when the real vetting happens, because obviously we want to meet them one-on-one in a public setting to, grill them basically and figure out they are who they say they are first. But we really get to know who they are when we get to see them interact with other people. So bringing them into these smaller group settings before they are fully cleared to, go to our larger pool parties is, it's been a very successful tactic.
So has it been people mostly in their 20s and 30s? Because it seems like a very young movement that's happening in the alt-right.
I'd say mostly in our 20s and 30s people are, but we do have some members that are 40s, 50s, I think even a couple that might be in their early 60s.
That's good. We need to have some elders too. It's good to have some age diversity for experience and life experience, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And it ranges anywhere from single men to full families that are involved in the group. So it's really great because we want to be a family organization. So having families be involved and have family friendly events that really encourages the single guys to gives them an example of what they're striving for.
Exactly. That's good. Well, I want to ask each one of you how you came to where you are politically today and a little bit about your political background. I'm always curious to hear people's stories. So let's start with you, Cato.
Oh, boy. So I'm still a pretty young guy. There's not a long story here. Basically, I've always been a bit of a centrist. If I was a bit older, I would have probably had a libertarian phase at some point. But it really all started in high school. So I'm the Seattle coordinator. So, incredibly liberal place. And when I was going to high school, I was basically surrounded by people who all had very similar liberal views. And I was in a debate class where all of us were supposed to get in groups and debate on different topics. And everyone pretty much had the same opinions and everything. So I had to start playing devil's advocate just to get an actual debate forming. And in doing that, I started looking into different, more right-wing views. And that eventually led me to research and empathize with a lot of the views. And then I got tired of the debates that were going on there. And I decided I wanted to do a bit of extracurricular activities and find someone on the internet who was incredibly far right that I could actually debate these ideals with. And that's how I stumbled onto Poll. And from there, the rest is kind of history.
That's how it is. Once you find Poll, I hear, it changes you forever. And that's great, too, Kata, that you don't have all that baggage. You're fresh, you're young, and you figured this out, and you have your whole life ahead of you. So that's always a great story. I love hearing that. Now, what about you, Heron Volk?
I grew up in the South, and so I always knew a bit about HBD, as far as blacks and whites go, at least. And then when I was in the Marines, I just had way too much time on my hands to do research about whatever I wanted to. So I started getting into like conspiracy theories, started off with like 9/11 conspiracies, and then YouTube, the eternal red pillar, put me on to some Holocaust conspiracy videos. So I watched those. I ate up about every single one I could find. And after being convinced that the National Socialists weren't the bad guys that I had been brainwashed into thinking they were, I started doing some research into right-wing politics, and I eventually found things like the Daily Stormer, TRS, and now I'm here.
Yeah, that's great. We also started, Red Ice. We weren't always on this page. Most people aren't just born knowing about the Holohoax, you have to go through the process. And like,
right. I watched a lot of your videos as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we started down the conspiracy trail and geopolitics and mind control and analyzing propaganda. And that was one of the things that we were doing. And then we just started noticing, what is all this anti-white garbage everywhere? Just, slamming white people like crazy. And then the rest is history. It just took us. I think if you're actually a truth seeker, you come to this, you come to the alt-right, you realize like there is a war on white people, right?
Right, if you're truly open-minded like the liberals say they are.
Now, what about you, Jeffrey Fairwater?
Yeah, so I grew up in Northern California in a kind of center-lefty family. So I was kind of brought up with a kind of a, you know, leftist lean. So it wasn't until high school that I found poll. It was more of an edutarian at that time. I never really took the doctrines or the ideology too deep or really accepted it. I just thought, you know, these Jew jokes are pretty funny. And, you know, I definitely questioned the Holocaust, so that set me down the right page. It wasn't really until I joined the Navy and got a taste for, you know, the real world outside of California and, you know, dealing with race realism firsthand that it really started to sink in. And, you know, of course, I continued to browse poll and never really branched out from there until I decided to make myself a sock Twitter account to, you know, go troll some media figures. That's what Twitter's for. And from there, I saw the Echo meme, the parentheses, and started asking people, like, what is this? Where did this come from? And they linked me to the Merchant Minute. And from there, of course, I found the Daily Showa. And from the Daily Showa, I made my own podcast, and now I'm on the TRS network, and that's how I found Cascadia. So that's my story in a nutshell.
Now, were you shocked at first when you saw some of those Jew jokes, or are you just, not really?
Oh, yeah. No, that was definitely my reaction at first, like, because, from being exposed, like, it was my first time really seeing, the Nazis in a shown in a positive light. And I was really taken aback by it. I'm like, are these people serious? Is this ironic? And like, I slowly started to realize they were serious and it was not ironic. And it turned me off a little bit at first, but then like I was drawn back to it almost magnetically out of curiosity. And of course, then I started actually reading their arguments and points, and I was like, well, they really do have some good arguments and points. So
yeah, yeah. That's what happens. I mean, the truth is on our side. That's why none of them want to debate us, because we actually have the winning argument and we can put them in a corner really fast. And that's why, too, they have to put away these, you know, Holocaust revisionists, historical revisionists. They have to put them in prison in Europe.
Right.
It's like,
right.
Why, what are you so afraid of?
Yeah. It's the truths don't even have to be that extreme or that untouchable as the Holocaust. Like, for instance, like Representative Steve King's statements about someone else's babies recently. You know, that's definitely a truth, but the reaction to that was just reeing and the accusations of heresy.
Yeah, he was getting called a Nazi, right? Yeah, he was just saying.
Yeah, but that's all they have. They can't actually refute our truths.
Well, that's good, because it actually it doesn't mean anything anymore. I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, I was actually going to say the same thing. That's the thing, is the word Nazi is becoming so overused that they're going to need to get a new way to shut us down pretty soon.
And it's also funny, because then, you know, true Nazis can actually just hide in all of that, because it doesn't mean anything anymore. Oh, God. So I want to know what's happening in the Northwest. I haven't been there in a while. I'm from there. Tell us about the, you know, political, social state of the Northwest area. What's going on up there? Because I know it's very white, of course, but it's very leftist.
So, yeah, it's very white and very leftist. You have liberals from all over the U.S. Coming out here as in a pilgrimage of sorts, because they see, you know, the television shows and all of that showing how nice and swipple and hipster the Northwest is. But what's really funny is a lot of these white liberals who move here like the Pacific Northwest for the same reasons we do. They have the swipple culture and it's safe. And both of those things are inherently white. It's safe because there's no diversity here, or a very small amount of diversity. And everything that goes along with swipple culture is just traditional white culture. So we're hoping we can convince a lot of these people to come over to our side, because without a white majority, swipple culture will not survive.
Did anyone else want to add anything to that?
Well, in terms of the climate, so where I'm from, at least, it's, like you said, incredibly lefty. There are a lot of socialist groups operating out of Seattle. I mean, this city was basically Bernie's, one of his like home bases during the campaign. With that being said, it actually makes it surprisingly easy to find dissatisfied people within the city, and there are lots of them. I would actually say that I owe the liberal climate here part of my red pilling experience, just because being around so much political correctness and just paused culture really sort of drove it all home for me early on.
Yeah, you can only walk across so many rainbow crosswalks before you start to get a little triggered yourself.
Now, are they starting to turn on each other at all? Do you guys see that?
Well, there is one instance. I think you actually hosted the video that we recorded of one of their own getting shot by one of their own at a rally recently.
Oh, that was your video. Nice. Yeah, exactly. And tell us a story about that in case people don't know what that was.
I didn't actually see the person get shot, but I mean, what I thought it was, I haven't followed the story too much, was an Antifa actually attacked a Trump supporter. It was an Asian Trump supporter, though, and the Trump supporter basically just reacted in self-defense, and there was a ton of different videos from a ton of different angles that show this Antifa guy assaulting the Asian man backing off, and then he keeps pursuing and gets a bullet in the stomach.
Okay, I guess I misheard. I thought the Asian guy was also a leftist.
Yeah, I thought he had a tattoo that was a big Antifa tattoo also.
Oh no, that was the guy who got shot. But the shooter, I believe, I'm like 90% sure, was a Trump supporter actually. Okay.
Oh, there's a doggy back there. It's okay.
Yeah, he's on every podcast.
I said there's a dog back there. I heard a car horn too in the back there somewhere too.
That might have been mine. With that being said, though, I have noticed some interesting trends where, like, there's now a difference between white feminism and quote-unquote feminism. And gay men are now being put in the same bag as all men when it comes to feminist arguments that all men are the devil and all that stuff. So I have noticed that as they go deeper and deeper into their identity politics, they're becoming more and more exclusive, to the point where pretty soon any man or anyone who was formerly a man probably won't be allowed in their secret clubhouses any longer.
And I had just seen some feminists complaining on other feminists who weren't supporting these, you know, men who transitioned to women who basically cut their balls off and took some hormones, that we now have to also uphold them as women and they get to march as women too. And don't forget the transsexuals. So it's just all over the place.
It's really, it's really fun to attack those fracture points too and inflame them. It's easy to do. You just use the leftist arguments and their talking points against them, and it's so easy just to fracture them that much further.
Now, Heron Vogt, you came from the South, so was there any kind of a culture shock for you when you went up to the Northwest?
Only that there are so many liberals. I mean, in the South, everyone is conservative to some extent. You might have your Baptist churches that are more liberal than one another, but they're at least still churches. Up here, that doesn't lie as much. The only churches you're going to find are things like universalist churches that have rainbow flags and Black Lives Matter hanging outside. So I guess that was a bit of a culture shock for sure.
Oh, don't get me started on the BLM churches. Like every church I pass by, they have the huge Black Lives Matter banner on top.
Ugh, yeah, a lot of the churches are just, they're cucked nowadays. Yeah, exactly. And in the South too, I mean, people always say, oh, they're so racist down there. I never met a racist white person in the South. Did you?
Well, I don't think anyone was, I didn't meet too many people that were openly racist, but there were a lot of people who would, you know, treat blacks nicely, but then once they walked away, be like, oh, I hate dealing with that nigger or whatever. You know, but I think people up here, people up here act the same way, but they're just not quite as open about it.
Now, how many minorities are we talking about up in your guys' area, Washington, Oregon, Idaho? I know they're also shipping in some refugees into Idaho and Montana. So how many are we looking at over there these days?
In the major city centers, it's as you'd expect in any major city. As you get outside of those major population and urban centers, it's almost unnoticeable from what I can see. Even out here where I am, I'm across the Puget Sound in Kitsap County, a peninsula, and it's very, very white, and it's almost just going across the water becomes very rural very fast, and the rural feel and attitude is much different. But yeah, that's the there's not much more minority population outside of, say, Seattle and Portland, from what I can tell.
Yeah, and I think I looked up the statistics a while ago. In Washington, we only have something like 7% of our population is Black. I'd honestly wager that the Asian minority is much bigger than the Black minority here. And we also are getting a lot of Indians because, of course, the tech giants like Microsoft and Amazon love their H-1B-1 slave labor.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, I hear from people in the IT world quite often from white guys, and they say that, yeah, exactly, it's being taken over by Indians. Like, there's not many white guys doing those jobs anymore. What do you guys know about that? I mean, because Seattle was is a very techie area, right?
Well, what I've heard from some of the people actually in Cascadia who work in the tech industry is that they are pretty much taking all the grunt work, or what would normally be entry-level positions. I would almost, again, I'm going by what I've heard, I would almost say that there's a sort of caste system in a lot of these different companies where you have the Indians doing the grunt work and writing the baser levels of the code. Then you have white guys higher up whose job it is to piece together all this code and fix any errors. So that's pretty much how it's going.
I know it's different. You know, the cities are different than the small towns. I don't know how much you guys travel, but are people in the smaller towns, are they more open to our message, or are they still cucked? Are they liberals? What are they? And is there any hope to reach those people that are out in the countryside?
Well, they're not liberals. I'd say there's a large contingent of libertarians for sure, and your, you know, classic boomer cuckservatives. But there's a huge support for Trump, at least up here in Washington, outside of Seattle, you know, King County, and these super, super blue centers. Just driving around the west side of Washington, around the Olympic mountains, all along the road on private property facing the highway are these giant, you know, homemade Trump signs, like almost every mile. Huge, huge supporting of it. So I'm not sure how receptive they would be to our stance, but, you know, they are definitely not the enemy, that's for sure.
I was going to say, Heron Volk, you actually have a pretty white-pilling story about the countryside and putting up some posters, didn't you? I just remember you telling me you put up some of our posters that in a city would get torn down within like a day somewhere out in the country in Oregon, and you drove by the same place a month later and all of them were still up.
Oh, yeah, right. That's down in a town close where I live. There's a major university there, but the university isn't quite as liberal as most. It's more of like a farm school where people go to learn about, you know, cow farming, CAFOs, things like that. So it's definitely much more conservative than most schools. But anyway, we put up quite a few posters here in town. And while these posters would normally be torn down within a matter of hours or days in Seattle or Portland, they remained up for months. And it's definitely not for lack of people seeing them, because this is the main street where there is the farmers market. So they're definitely getting views. I think people just don't care that much down here. I mean, they don't have anything to be scared of because it's totally white.
Yeah. It's funny, too, that it didn't make the news, because nowadays you just have to put up one poster and it makes the news everywhere. Anytime Nathan and Identity Europa put up some what we think is a harmless flyer, it always makes the news.
Well, that's the funny thing about the Pacific Northwest is that, you know, that all of the citizens in these major cities are liberal. The people in the town councils, the police, all of them are liberal. People who run the schools here, they're liberal. So when we put up posters, and these are definitely a bit more inflammatory than the IE posters, they get very little coverage. And I think it's because they know that they can starve us of attention. And I mean, that's a very smart move on their part, but we've got to find ways to get around that.
Now, are you guys being attacked by Antifas at all for Cascadia? Are people trying to dox you? What's happening? Because I hear that Seattle has quite an Antifa presence, but when I see pictures of them, they look quite quite pathetic.
So
that's because they are. They're completely impotent.
I have something to definitely say about that. I have several times now gone out in public to like the greater Seattle area, plain clothes, just how I would dress when I'm getting off of work. And I've gone out with a glass scraper, which is one of those little scrapers with a razor blade. And I've just gone up and down street after street, scraping off all of their stuff and replacing it with Cascadia stuff. And we're talking like for 3 hours at a time, 3 or 4 hours here, doing this in front of bus stops where there's 20 people waiting. No one has said anything. No one's even taken my picture. I've looked behind me. No one follows me. And these are in places where they have those Antifa controlled zone posters or like anti-racist zone. So I don't know about other places, but for me personally, Antifa is not doing anything. They are a joke in this area. They step in, put up a few of these anti-racist zone posters, and then just leave and never come back again. They are just, they're absolutely pathetic, in all honesty. And
well,
I know some of them are going
to
be
fascists when you're lying in the gutter on drugs.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
And I hope some of them hear that, too.
They're trying to pump themselves up like they have this huge presence, and we've got Seattle and lockdown, and nothing's happening.
No, not even close. Yeah. They'll talk a big game online, but they're most likely holed up at the local state-run injection center. Just
needle
taking heroin. Yeah. Yeah.
Did they have this in Seattle now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you think he's memeing? He's
no,
he's
I know. They're putting those in. They have them in Canada. They're putting them in New York. So they have one in Seattle, huh? Have you guys driven by there and checked out the crowds going in?
Oh, yeah. They are the scum of the earth and also Antifa. So not the best people.
They're not sending their best.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, you guys tell people what are these injection centers that the government has built. Fill us in.
Oh, boy. So they are places right now in Seattle. We only have needle exchanges, which are where these degenerates can go and turn in their old, used, bloody heroin needles for new, clean needles because something's stopping the spread of disease. And a lot of these places I recently found out also give out meth and crack pipes on the side. Same reason, because you don't want to get herpes from smoking out of someone else's pipe or something. Now, what they are going to do, and what just recently got approved, is a safe injection site where they're taking it one step further and saying that you guys, that these degenerates can come in this building and lay down on a nice bed and have a professional volunteer nurse inject them with heroin that is kept on site because they figure it's safer than letting them do it themselves. It'll reduce overdoses or whatever, which is complete bullshit because when they tried it in Canada, it's actually very funny. The amount of overdoses across the country went down, but the amount of overdoses in that particular city, and unfortunately I forget which city it is now, skyrocketed. Surprisingly enough.
And we pay for this, right? The taxpayers pay for these drugs, for these druggies.
Oh, yeah. That is taxpayer heroin right there.
Oh, jeez. God, I can't believe that's happening. Yeah, and see, and this is why some people in the alt-right are like, that's it. I just want to, you know, flee to the mountains and have my community. But, you know, there's a lot of alt-right people that want to stay in urban communities and keep a presence. So where do you guys fall into the mix? Do you guys want to start communities that are kind of out in rural areas or be in the city? Tell me.
Well, we're trying to strike a balance.
Right. Instead of concentrating on one place, we're trying to change this degenerate cultural milieu we live in to something that everyone's going to want to live in and raise their kids. So instead of focusing on the cities or moving out into the forest and starting up farms or anything like that, we just want to change the culture and do some culture jamming.
Yeah, I always say I think that we should do a little bit of everything. We should be in the cities and have a presence, but then it's also good to have, you know, other people out in the countryside who know how to farm and know how to do things. So, I mean, if shit does hit the fan, we have networks of, you know, farmers that know how to grow food, or we know where to get clean water, or we have places that we can go to, or safe houses if someone gets in trouble with the law and needs to hide. You know, we need to have options. I think we should have a variety.
Exactly. Yeah. Diversity is our strength.
Yeah, we certainly have all these things. I mean, the biggest weapon that the left uses against us just for thinking the way we do is essentially starving us. You know, if we get doxxed, we'll lose our jobs, which is taking food out of our mouths and out of our families' mouths. And the only way to prevent that is to have a network of people just like us who are willing and able to support us. So we need to, create a microeconomy just within our own ranks, within the alt-right, where we can be as self-sufficient as possible and not have to rely on the actual economy.
Exactly. Having businesses where we can buy from each other and hire each other. So when someone says, I'm going to call on your boss and get you fired, and then, you know, your boss answers and tells them, you know what? Fuck off. I mean, yeah,
right.
We need
that's
those.
The dream.
Yeah. I mean, we need those kinds of networks. I think about that all the time. And I mean, there's so many companies now that you just can't buy from because you don't want to support them. And it's like where you can go to is a very small list anymore. At least it is for me.
Yeah, we're definitely doing that already. And it's growing very rapidly. We have people in every sector I can think of, we have people in the tech industry. We have farmers. We have people in the medical profession. Just you name it, we've got Cascadians who are experts in that field. And, you know, that's what we want to do above all else, is ultimately infiltrate all aspects of society here in the Pacific Northwest. You know, we want to basically be a shadow government where look underneath any given rock and there's a Cascadian pulling strings and making the Pacific Northwest better for white people.
I like that. Secret societies. It's funny. We used to do a lot of shows, Henrik did, on secret society networks and stuff. And now here we are.
I mean, we know that they exist. So why not become one that is benevolent to whites?
Exactly. I totally agree. Now, long term, what do you guys see for the future of America? How do you think things are going to go down if, you know, multiculturalism is just continuing, mass immigration's continuing, all this anti-white rhetoric is ramping up? I don't know how much Trump's actually going to do. What do you guys see long term for the future of America? All of you guys jump in here.
Balkanization.
Honestly, Balkanization.
So how would that go down?
Oh, geez. I mean, it's hard to start speculating.
There are infinite possibilities, really, I think.
Yeah, all we can do, it doesn't help to really speculate. It helps to be prepared. In all aspects. Ultimately, what we would want is the most peaceful resolution possible. Most likely, the left's not going to make that a possibility. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to hope for it. Nonetheless, you know, we want to be prepared in all ways. And we don't want to come across as crazy preppers or anything, because there's such a bad connotation that goes with that. But it is, you know, traditionalism is being prepared for anything.
Right. And luckily, these people that we would probably eventually be fighting are the same people who are going to these government-funded injection sites and have shitty Antifa street tattoos on them. So minimal preparation will get you a long way.
Yeah, a few smart guys can take care of, you know, thousands of idiots, right?
Right, right.
That's the general goal, is really just general preparedness. We don't know how things are going to go down or when, but we want to make sure that when it does happen, we have a good, solid network and we have plenty of fallback points.
Very smart. I think it's interesting too, how whenever we talk about, you know, separating, they hate white people and say, okay, well, if you hate white people, then just don't live with them. Just let them have their own area. And then you don't have to live with white people, but they don't want that either, do they? They just kind of want to be in our space and hound us and, you know, suck money from us, don't they?
Of course.
Well, right. White people have the money and the nice things, and they want the money and the nice things. We're just mean for not giving it to them.
And I wonder how that would go down if the government was, because the government is, let's face it, it is against us. And how would that go down if there was a group of people like us who legally tried to separate and have their own territory? I don't know how that would go down. Maybe it's going to work. We'll see what happens with California collects it. I really hope that happens.
Yeah, we'll see if California can pull it off, and then that'll set a good precedent. The South will probably be the next to follow, and then hopefully by the time the Pacific Northwest does it, there'll be a good template in place to do it the right way.
So what are ways you think in which we can prepare now? I know we've been talking about this, though, unlike our parents, you know, for what's coming in the future. What are some things we need to do to make things better for our children? Because our parents just dropped the ball, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, we need to reestablish traditional families and traditional communities, which the community is built on the family. So really, that's the most important thing. You need men and women in traditional mindsets who are going to commit to marriage, to raising their children the right way, and to protecting their community from degeneracy.
Right. Pass on tradition. So many people nowadays are, I mean, that's half of the Swipple culture that we've been talking about, is all these whites who had baby boomer parents that never taught them anything, trying to grasp out or grab out and find some tradition from their families. You know, before, your dad used to be a carpenter and he would pass that down to you, or your mother was great at knitting and sewing and she would pass that down to you. But nowadays we have none of that. So we're just stuck with, you know, video games and porn and drinking in bars. You know, we have no tradition like our ancestors used to.
Yeah, I think it's worse, right, too, in America, because you go to Europe, and I always say this, in Europe, they don't have to say white nationalists. They're just Swedish nationalists, Polish nationalists, German nationalists, right? But they have,
they have an ethnic consciousness. Yeah,
exactly. And they still have those traditions and that history, and they're connected to the land. But it's even harder for us because we're so far away from where we came from, right?
Well, right. Yeah. Unlike in Europe, where people still have very real roots. I mean, you might live on land that your ancestors lived on, you know, for the past 1,000 or so years. Here in America, we're already racist because colonists came to this land, and then we're racist because we killed the Indians, and then we're racist because we had slaves. And after children are taught that for, you know, 20 plus years, all throughout school, these kids are left with nothing but popular culture as their tradition.
Now, what are some things you guys are doing for your kids as they grow up to teach them about their European roots? Or is there new traditions you're trying to create to kind of break the cycle of this rootlessness?
I'd say homeschooling is probably the biggest thing. Taking your kids out of public school and these brainwashing centers and controlling what's going into their heads is probably the first and foremost thing you can do.
And also reading them the actual stories of our ancestors, not this paused bullcrap about how Columbus was horrible, we're all just slavers and all that. Read them empowering stories that show them why being a European is pretty much the greatest thing on earth.
Right, yeah. And you know, there's so many things that you can just not do that'll set your kids up for success. Like, rather than taking them to go see a Jewish movie, take them to a national park to, you know, take a walk in nature. Things like that. It's just so simple to do, yet people really overlook their value.
I'm glad you brought up homeschool. You know, in Sweden, homeschooling is illegal. I don't know if you guys know that.
Wow.
And you
can, I'm not surprised.
You can only do it under extremely special circumstances. And I looked at what those were, and it's pretty much impossible. You can't get it. You know, it doesn't matter.
Jeez.
It doesn't matter what your situation is. But these Muslims, they can have these, you know, schools where it's just all Muslims, of course. You know? But if they do let you under these special circumstances, the government comes and checks like what you're doing and how you're teaching your kid, and they want to give you the curriculum. So you're teaching them the same stuff just at home. It's pretty crazy.
That's really depressing to hear.
I know, it's awful. So the idea of homeschool networks is good too. Is that something you guys are talking about doing, so that the kids can feel like they have a school, so they're with other kids and not just stuck with mom and dad all day, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely a good goal to work towards. And I think we've discussed things like that. The thing about, you know, being in the Pacific Northwest and having it be such a leftist Swipple area, they do some things right. And in one of those ways is homeschooling. Like, it's very, very easy to homeschool your kid in the Pacific Northwest. Washington particularly, the programs in place are fantastic. And that can be totally used to our advantage, even though it's a leftist institution, essentially.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Well, another thing I do like about some of those lefty areas, and we have to reclaim this because this is really comes back to, you know, rightist mentality. But, you know, I'm big in organics. I don't like GMOs. I don't like chemicals. And that's something those Swipple areas, you know, you have more of that. You have more whole foods in those areas and farmers markets and organic farms and stuff, don't you?
Yeah, we do. And we actually, we're pretty proud of it. And, you know, we don't shy away from it at all. It's, you know, agreeing with lefties for the right reasons, and because they do have some things right, and we do agree with them in a lot of ways with their, you know, environmentalism, their health foods and all that good stuff. Like we definitely do not shy away from that. You know, being nationalists, we like things that are good for the nation. So whether or not it falls on one side of the spectrum of politics or another doesn't really matter to us as long as it's objectively good.
I find that a lot of lefties get thrown off too with the alt-right because it's not your typical, you know, conservatives. We're not freaked out of words like socialism. And so they're like, who are these people? What is this? It just totally flusters them. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with certain types of welfare and socialism as long as it's for white people, but that's right. The part that they don't like.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Lefties already have a hard enough time pinning down conservative views, but when looking at the alt-right, it's just a complete mystery to them, I think.
They want socialism for the world, not just the nation. So basically, they want communism, right?
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're also bringing on Paige, Heron Vogt's wife. So hello, Paige. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you're also part of Cascadia, of course, and you have a women's group going. So tell us about what you're doing.
Yeah, it's truly exciting. And the one thing that I would like to leave listeners with is hope and optimism for the future. We have a girls group. It's parallel to our guys group. It started about the same time with a couple wives, and it's just grown exponentially from there. And we focus on traditionalism and, like you were talking earlier, homeschool networks, traditional crafts like knitting and cooking. We babysit for events so the guys can go off and be men. So it's truly been a really rewarding process. And I think how we're doing it is the most sustainable way for the future. I've been the ladies coordinator for other organizations or other servers with women. And it quickly devolves into chaos. So I'm really proud of our structure and standards that have made this such a rewarding process.
I find alt-right women, I have more women friends now than ever in my life because I found that women were always, you know, quite catty and bitchy in the past, you know. So I was always stuck surrounded by, you know, all the guys always, you know. But I find that the alt-right women, they don't have that kind of stuff because they know that this is our survival at stake here. They're over that kind of BS and they're thinking of bigger, important goals. They're thinking of tribe. They're thinking of nation. They've left that kind of extreme individualism and the materialistic aspect of, you know, what has been pushed on white women, really, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of what our structure is there for. Our women in the group are married or in very long-term stable relationships with the men in our group, which I think really is key because, I mean, a single woman can't help but to be attention-seeking. It's not her fault. She's looking for a mate. And we found that kind of behavior to be damaging not only to the women's group as they don't want to participate as much in building female relationships, but also to the men's group. And so like our chats are segregated and we're really focused on building female community around traditionalism. So like I said, it's been very rewarding and I'm encouraged by the girls group as well as Cascadia for pushing past that magic drinking buddies number that a lot of groups tend to get stuck in, like mm-hmm. between 5 and 20. Like we have our drinking buds, like we have our friendship, we have our community, like we don't need to grow anymore. And they just stay there stagnant, which is really such a disservice to your fellow white people around you who you can offer this beautiful community to and your structure. So really proud of our group in that respect.
I think too that a lot of white guys, they miss the having a gang, you know, having a true brotherhood. I think that's kind of been robbed from them. And that's such a part of our psyche, you know, tribalism. And same with women. I've been saying this a lot too, of like the sisterhood. I don't mean this in a feminist or a witchy way, but anytime I say that, that's what people think. They think of some feminist crap or some like Wiccan witch group or something. But I mean, we need a sisterhood of white women, a white gang. I think that that's been robbed from us through a lot of propaganda. If you look at all the movies and the TV shows, they always show these white girls just being awful to each other, don't they? And I think a lot of women, the white girls, they crave that. They want to have those good friendships.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think feminism has robbed women of our traditional female tribe, and it's tried to turn us into men and told us that we need to compete with one another and throw each other under the bus. Like, hey, ladies, the men's world is cutthroat, and that's what you have to do to survive. So they've just wreaked havoc on us. And so the girls that we're getting, it's kind of a unique challenge to our girls group. Since we're getting wives and long-term girlfriends, all these girls are either newly reformed liberals or still at least partially liberal. And so our process is kind of like bringing them the rest of the way towards us. And our transition period, our prospect period, can last years if need be. And kind of like that healing process. Like, don't worry, it's okay to hang out with other women. We aren't catty, we're honest with one another. We have high standards, but we'll encourage you and help you get there. That's all right. And so we just had a member who had a baby recently. And so we got together and we all, like, we cooked food and we brought over baby toys and we went there and just showered them with love and affection and community and just celebrated the birth of this new child. And that's what this is truly about, is supporting one another.
That's great. Yeah, that's what it takes, is showing acts of kindness. I know Golden Dawn, they do that. They go around and they just help people that are in need. And because of that, they win people over through their kindness. So I think that that's excellent. Also, when you're talking, it kind of reminds me of, you know, we always say that liberalism is like a cult. So you're dealing with these girls who are basically like, they've just left the cult, but the cult still has a little hook in them. They're like ex-cult members that need to be deprogrammed. That's basically, I mean, that's kind of how I felt when I came out of this stuff. Like, what did I just go through, you know? I have to reprogram everything that I learned. So, yeah, I mean, and I think women can gently do that and help other women. And one thing is they learn through conditioning through the group, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I think because women are so tribal, the biggest thing that prevents women from jumping over into the alt-right is, well, I have this liberal peer group behind me. If I adopt these views, even if I'm just a regular garden variety Trump supporter, they're going to ostracize me. And back in the day, that would have meant death. You would have gotten left out in the wilderness. You would have died. So why the hell would they ever say something against the group and risk that? But what we do is we say, don't worry, we have a new tribe for you to land on. It's okay to take that jump. And look, we're normal people. Our first double dates that we go on with these women, they're always shocked to see that we don't have like swastikas on their face, on our faces. We're normal, we're sweet, kind women, just like they think their liberal peer group is.
Yeah.
So we make the transition very easy.
Yeah, we're not Nazis from the trailer park, and we're not from the wacky church, right? Like they try and show that we are all the time.
Exactly. Yes, that's the expectation.
Also, the other one I see that comes up too, when you say traditionalism and you're talking about these things, people automatically think like Mormon women. No offense to Ayla. I love Ayla, a good friend of mine, Mormon. But, you know, they automatically think that it's like some kind of church cult or something, don't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so We focus on the positive, that we are, I say we're like archaeologists. What we're really doing is just digging up and retaking our culture and our traditions back. Like my husband was saying, like knitting and sewing, looking after our children. And I think once women hang around the others who have kids or have a kid themselves, they realize that for the first time in their life, they're truly happy. I've never been this happy in my entire life, and I've never had friends that were girls before. And so I was truly scared at first. I wanted to be a diplomat and give microloans to third worlders. And I thought I was going to be happy doing that. And I was so miserable. But now I feel like I found my family. And so, yes, that is their concern at first. It always is something that we have to deal with. But it's quickly washed away by the overwhelming positivity they see in the group.
I think it's good too for these other younger women to see other young women with babies, because a lot of times when you go into the city, you know, going to LA, I remember there not too long ago, it's like, where's all the children? I don't see any babies anywhere, you know? And then they're constantly pushing all this propaganda. I just saw another one. I think it was a CNN spread or something about how babies kill your romance life and your sex life. And of course, it's like a picture of these white people on the cover. You know, they're always pushing this to girls. So it's good for them to see that. And I think it also, different kind of hormones kick on. Some other biological function comes on just when women are surrounded by kids. And then they kind of have that desire to like, yeah, I want to have kids too. Plus, it's more fun when you have girlfriends and you can raise the kids together, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Baby fever is at like insane levels right now in the group. I feel like I can't concentrate on anything. My baby fever is so bad. Oh, what's nice about Oregon is there are so many white families around here. Like my husband was saying, it's such a hipster culture, such a white culture. There's such low levels of diversity. It's really safe. It's really encouraging to see all of these white, normal liberal parents with tons of kids. I always make it a point to go over and compliment them. But truly, being around so many families makes you want to have kids too. And we've been fortunate to have a lot of older women coming into Cascadia now that have like 3 or 4 kids. Because I've never had a child. I don't have kids yet. And a lot of these younger girls don't either. And there's a lot of fear behind it. Like, am I going to be able to afford this? Childbirth sounds so terrifying. And to have them hold our hand through the entire process. Don't worry, that rash is normal. Your baby's not going to die. You're going to be fine. Or don't worry, birth isn't that scary. Here's what to expect. It's been so encouraging. It's really helped me with a lot of my fears. And I can't wait to have my own kids in this community with them.
Oh, you'll be a great mom, I know. But last question. So how are you finding women? How are they finding you, rather?
It's been a very... because it's a healing process for myself as well. I met my husband in the Marines. And so I came out of the Marines a little bit more assertive and learning how to reintegrate into female communities has been hard for me, just as it is for these women as well. And just relearning women's psychology and how we work well together. For instance, I think it's very important to encourage investment in the ladies group with participation and to individually reach out to these girls and find where they're at and what they're proud of, what their pedestal is, and like to put them on that pedestal. We have a girl who's really, really good at knitting. And so to reach out to her and say, hey, I think it's really important and I think it's great that you know how to do this. Come out and teach the other girls. Or hey, you're really good at writing. Would you like to submit some pieces for like our website in the future? So really reaching out to them, encouraging and investment in our community, because it's really human capital that we're investing in. And whenever we invest in each other and participate, even in daily chats with baby posting or food posting, we're investing in this community long term. And we can't say it enough. We've probably said it dozens of times already, but community, 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 community. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether we do activism or any of this other stuff. If we do not have community, then we will not be sustainable. We will not stand the test of time. We will fail in the long run. Human relationships and our white community is the greatest thing that we have to offer our brothers and sisters. And I think that's really what sets Cascadia apart, and that we look at a holistic view of a community. It's not just for the men and their drinking buddies. It's for white women and white children, because you can't save the white race without white women and white children. It needs to encompass everything. So that's last note of great encouragement to these groups to go out there and don't be afraid to start a women's community.
Well, thank you, Paige. That's great. I'm so glad that we've connected. We'll have to talk more off air. But lastly, guys, I want to know, how can people reach out to you guys if they want to hook up with you? Because I know we have a lot of listeners in the Northwest. And if you're listening to this, be sure that you heard this show. How can they get a hold of you guys?
Through our website is the best way. Our website is truecascadia.com, TRUECascadia.com. And it's very, very easy to follow. If you just scroll down on the main page, there's a little grid of different geographical areas in Cascadia. Just click on the one that corresponds with where you live, or if you're moving here, where you're going to be living. And that links you to our email for that area and the coordinator who runs that area. And we try to be as responsive as possible. So we should get back to you within, what'd you say, Cato, like a couple days at worst?
Yeah, we are actually already getting a lot of people interested. So it'd probably be a couple of days at worst. We're working through them as fast as we can, but we're only so many people, you know?
Yeah. The biggest thing is, don't be scared to reach out to us. We're not going to bite. We want to help you. And if you are genuine and you want you want to be part of the community and part of the tribe, reach out to us and we will do our best to meet you and find a place for you in Cascadia.
It's so encouraging that you guys are having a lot of people reach you. I love hearing that. Nathan says that with Identity Europa too. I hear that from some other groups, and so people are starving for this right now. So it's great that you guys are taking the initiative to create these next networks. So amazing, important work. Thank you guys. Any closing thoughts?
If you're scared about doing anything, just go out and do it. If you don't think you're doing everything you could possibly be doing for the movement, change that. Go out and do more. Everyone else can do it if you just apply yourselves.
That's right. There's a place for everyone, right? You just have to know what your talents are and you put them to use.
Yeah, with enough agency, everything is possible. That's kind of my catchphrase, and it's absolutely true.
Exactly.
But my closing thought is, create the white society that you want to live in.
They pretty much encapsulated it all. If I could reach out to all the guys all across America, though, you know, if there isn't an area, if there isn't a group around your area, maybe you should be the one to start it. You know, like they're saying, take that initiative, make the world you want. That is how we got this whole thing started. Is we were a bunch of guys with enough agency to look at a world we didn't like and say, you know what, we're going to change this.
All right, it's fantastic, guys. Thanks, Cato, Jeffrey, Fairwater, Aaron Voke, and Paige. I really appreciate your time. It's been fantastic. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
If you haven't connected with an alt-right group in your area, do it. If you're in your 20s, Identity Europa also has a network across the country. And if you don't know of one in your area, start one yourself. But of course, be strict on the vetting process. If you haven't already, check redice.tv for more radio, video interviews, TV segments, and other commentary. This show is supported by people like you. How? Through memberships available at redicemembers.com. We have zero ads, sponsors, and we do not monetize our content. We need you to help us grow so we can continue to fight back against the massive anti-white propaganda machine. Members can also watch Weekend Warrior, our live TV show, every Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also chat with fellow members during the show. A special thanks to our members. Have a great week.